this week brings up some questions to you, of something you would like to see covered, then this is not your last chance, but you want to get your questions written down and to me. So if there's an area or an issue you'd like to see dealt with before we move on to something else. And you can think about this. I've talked to Ken and Carlton a little bit, and if anybody has any input, what we're thinking about moving on to next is either the nature and character of God, who He is, what He's like, or prayer. So you guys think about that, pray about it, see if you have any input. And maybe we'll do both, it's just whichever one we do first. Last week, we tried to cover a little bit, lay a little bit of groundwork of what the purpose of the family is. And I think we all have a pretty good feel for that. The purpose of the family, of God revealing who He is through the relationship of the husband and the wife, revealing what the relationship of Christ and the church. I think revealing in the family what the body is supposed to be like, the love relationships, the interaction, the joy. I think that also I think probably portraying, given a look, I know it may be hard to believe, but given a little bit of a glimpse of what heaven, what our heavenly family, our heavenly home will be like. I know that can be hard for us to believe because things can get kind of rough at home sometimes. But if you think about it, at some time when it's been its best, when your relationship at home has been its best, and that could be when you were a child, it could be when you're married and have your own kids, it could be when you've been in somebody else's home and you've just experienced, just maybe been just for a moment. But I think that gives us an eternal flavor of what it will be like on a much, much multiplied scale in heaven and the relationships there. We looked at family being the opportune time and situation for making disciples. And I hope that we're not going to be able to get into it this week, but I hope to next week get into some of discipling older kids and some ideas on how to do that, and some, I won't say methods, but just some ideas. And that the home should be a training ground, that we want so much more for our kids. We are commanded for so much more than just raising good kids that get a good education and that are good members of society. We are required to do so much more than that. But our track record in the church, I'm not sure if it shows all the potential that is there. We have a tremendous untapped ability to raise children for Christ, and that they would go out and represent Him in character and in His purpose. So that's our goal, and that's one of the purposes of the family. It should be a training ground. Now we touched a little bit on the idea of discipline last week, where I asked you if you had a strong-willed child, and some of you acknowledged and stood, and and you may have noticed even sweet little Caleb out there this morning that had to have a little bit of discipline, because he would not stop as he's running through the parking lot. But today, we're going to look at a principle, one foundational principle. And this is something I'm just beginning to understand. But I believe it kind of wakes me up, like, this is critical. This idea, this principle of what we're going to talk today, I believe is foundational for understanding the rest of, because next week what I would like to do is just go down a list of principles and try to touch most of the areas. I know there's no way to deal with everything, but try to touch most of the areas, or a lot of areas, a few areas of training children. But what we're going to talk about today is interwoven in it all. And it's, I don't think we can understand it in one session. So I may raise some questions in your mind. But hopefully when we start working through the principles, you'll understand this central foundational principle that we're going to talk about today. When parents, I've seen this. When parents decide to make some changes in their home, they hear something like this, a series we've gone through on training children. They'll read a book. And they'll say, we're going to make some changes in our home. And they move towards some positive things, some consistent discipline to get control of the will of that child, like we talked about last week, to train, to set some goals, to have a Christian home, to really have a home that's different than the world. And I've seen families set out for this with good intentions, but yet make some mistakes. Some mistakes that are made both in Christian and non-Christian homes. And so, what we're going to talk about today, one of the purposes of this is to alleviate, to help with any misunderstanding of what is taught. If that makes... we're going to talk about whether your home is going to be a law-based home, based on rules, or is it going to be a grace-based home? And this concept I have found to be not a difficult concept when we think about ourselves and our relationship with God, but how do we model that, and how do we get to that place in the home? And how do we teach that to our children? Because it is a difficult thing to get across. So that's what we're going to do. What we will cover today will build on the foundational themes of Scripture that we covered in Firm Foundations. Everything we do should be able to branch off of the central theme of Scripture that we talked about in Firm Foundations. Everything we do should be able to branch off of that. And I've had some trouble in connecting, training children with that. I don't even know if I can explain to you the trouble I have with it. I think it has to do with, you know, the purpose of the law. What's the purpose of the law? The rules of God. What's the purpose of it? To make us aware of our sin. So, then do we just have a bunch of rules in our home so that our kids will fail and see they can't do it and recognize their sinners and turn to God? There's something that doesn't quite fit about that, isn't there? There's something that's not... I have trouble connecting those two. Do you see what I mean? I mean, do you understand my problem here? Or are you thinking about it? We still have a responsibility in our home to teach this and model this on a deep level. So, you could say this part A in your outline is kind of the whole book of Romans. Don't worry, I'm not going to teach the book of Romans, Ann. But the concept... is there. The concept is there. The law, I think we all can agree to this. The law is trying to make yourself acceptable to God. Trying to make yourself acceptable to God. If you're trying to be good enough to be acceptable to God, that is works. That's the law. Grace is unmerited favor. It is God giving you righteousness by faith. We don't need to go into a lot of detail. We have covered that over and over. And we bear the fruit of obedience to the law through faith, but it's not faith in the law, it's faith in a relationship. It's faith in what God is doing in me. It's faith in God who lives in me, and the result is obedience. Now, a good thing about getting these principles down and really understand how we're going to apply this in the home is that I can't tell you, and you can't read a book that's going to cover every situation you face as a parent. You can read everything that Dobson ever wrote, and you can read whatever. There's a million books out there. But you're not going to cover every single situation you run into. So what you have to do is you have to get some principles that, and they better be scriptural principles if you want to get it right. So what we have to do, we have to understand these principles, and then we can apply these principles to every situation that we run into in raising kids, in a family, in the relationships that we have in the home. We have to operate off of these principles. So this first one is huge. But like I said, understanding it and putting it into practice can be a gradual thing. But don't be discouraged. If it's what you believe, and if it's what you live by personally, then it will show up in your home. But we're going to give you some ideas on how to encourage this to happen. The discipline, I think particularly maybe, the discipline that you use in your home and how you do it and what your attitude is in it will be greatly affected by understanding this principle of law and grace. I also believe the atmosphere in your home will be greatly affected by this principle of, is your home a law-based home or is it a grace-based home? I think that is there going to be joy and orderly freedom in your home, or is there going to be chaos? Is there going to be tension? Is there going to be rebellion? I think it will fall back to how you run your home. Is it according to law or is it according to grace? I also believe, as I was thinking through this and studying through it, and I'm having to teach it before I'm done with it. And I'm a little uncomfortable with that, but here. We're doing it. I'm seeing in myself some of the struggles that I have in my relationship with God. I see that it comes from a lot of the ways that we were raised. A lot of things from our own families. And so I think as we go through this, you can identify some of your own personal shortcomings in your relationship with God and overcome them. To identify those things is the first step in overcoming them. So as we talk about kids, raising kids, family, it's not just for you raising your kids. It's also for you identifying some issues. Don't really like that term, but I guess it's good. Some issues you might have in your relationship with God or your relationship with other people. So, back to the law and grace. Romans obviously nails this down. It talks about rules, the law, and the purpose of law. And it talks about the holiness of God and the justice of God. That God always punishes sin. Always. He is just. Completely holy. But we know also that He has mercy and He has grace. And that we've talked about that. How do we balance those? And you know, I hate to even use the term balancing law and grace. Because we don't balance it. We don't instill the law over here and then I've been doing the law too much. Now I better add some grace to it. That's not how we balance it out. We understand the relationship between law and grace. And so that's one of the things we want to be able to, we hopefully will get to today. We know that the law is to finally convince us that we have done wrong. That the law is our tutor to take us, that brings us to the cross. Whereas works, the law, you could use the term works. Works says, I can do it. I can do it on my own strength. I can make myself acceptable to God. Now, in the New Testament, what we see is grace. We see a relationship-based obedience. A relationship-based obedience. That is out of love. Now, the fruit of a relationship with Jesus, and a relationship with Jesus means yieldedness to Him. The fruit of a relationship, that relationship is obedience to the law. But it's the result of the relationship. It's not a focus on the law. So we know that we must have rules and we must have discipline. I mean, the New Testament has rules. It has, you know, you can do this and don't do that. There are rules in the New Testament. We are not without rules and order. But we have to find this relationship. Because this is at the heart of God. Now, when I say that, you think back, firm foundations. Everybody in here has been through that or is going through it. So you think back. That is getting to the heart of God. That great theme of how we are accepted by God. I think if we don't get this down, if we don't instill this, if we don't get this understanding to our children, they may not be able to verbally tell it back to us at 6 or 7 or 8, or maybe they will be able to. But if they don't get this down in their spirit, then we will greatly hinder them coming to know God. And if they do come to know God, we will greatly hinder their relationship. It'll take them to be our age before they are able to consistently walk in the Spirit and to be available to God. But you know what? If our homes are right, if we get this right, we should be able to send our kids out at 18, 19, 20 to where they are ready to serve God wholeheartedly, be used by Him, not have to be tethered by rules and our oversight, but completely trustworthy. That they have the value system inside of them, not pushed on them and forced on them. And it can be done. So we don't want to hamper them. We want to equip them to go out. So if the law by itself, will get a response from the flesh. The flesh, the old nature, the Adam nature. The law by itself will get a response from the flesh. That response is, if I obey, I will be accepted. That response is to work for acceptance. It's to work for acceptance that never really comes. Can you relate to this? To work for... Think about this. Are you still trying to please your parents? Do you have a little bit of that in you? Well, you're still trying to gain their approval. You still want them to accept you. Approve of you. Approve of how you live. Approve of your family. Approve of your job. But that will never come until you get this concept of law and grace. And we don't want to put our kids in that situation. Now people can go in this direction of thinking that they're acceptable to God now because they've obeyed a couple of these rules. Like the rich young ruler that came to Jesus and said, I've done all this since my childhood. Ha ha ha, look at me. I'm good. But he wasn't. He was fooled. He did not understand law and grace. He thought, because he had obeyed a few rules, that he was acceptable to God. That he was something in himself. So, you can get this pride. And this is, you see this in works-type religions. And you see it in Christianity a lot, too. Or you get the other extreme, and you see people that come out of a really... You see in the extreme, maybe the best way to see it, an extremely rules and law-based home. I'm sure you've all seen this. Some kids will come out of that and they will just always be in that situation I just told you about. Always trying to be accepted. Being good. Doing everything right. Being overachievers. You know, just going after it. Being successful, maybe, but never satisfied. Never good enough. And even in church situations, always trying to move to the top, always trying to be the leader, always trying to do everything. Or can go to the other extreme and just say, forget it all, and go wild as soon as they get out the door. As soon as they hit college or as soon as they get free of their parents, they just drop it all and they just go crazy. So you see those two extremes, those two responses of the flesh. But I think you see a lot of miserable people trying to gain approval from people and God. That's what you see coming out. There's a lot of miserable people that are never feel accepted, never feel approved by God, by their parents, by their friends, always looking for acceptance, approval, and never really getting it. And I think we can change this in our own homes and the next generation that we that follow us do not have to deal with this same issue. And we can get over it too if we gain a deeper understanding. We know that if the law is used to try it, now you'll see me, I'm going to flip-flop back and forth here to our relationship with God and the family, because it's just so interconnected. But we'll straighten it out a little later. But right now, just trying to gain this understanding. If the law is used to try and save man, it frustrates the cross. It makes the cross of no value. It's a waste of the blood of Christ. And your children will also be frustrated by a law-based home. You will frustrate them with a law-based home because it's unattainable. And you can't even do it. You can't do what you're asking your kids to do. Do you always speak respectfully? Do you share always with people in need? Do you respond with joy, or do you respond in anger sometimes? Well, you're asking them to keep those rules. How do you balance that out? You hypocrite? Really, how do you balance that out? Do they do right because of a rule or because of a relationship? In other words, is your home law-based or is it grace-based? So hopefully you see a little bit of where we're headed here. What the home is based on will give them and you a deep understanding of works and grace and your acceptance by God. I think the home is the place to get this. You know, I can stand up here and teach this, but you know the best way to learn is a simulation. Yeah, I'll teach it, and then hopefully you'll go home and teach this to your children, the things we teach. And we'll talk about you men, your responsibility to teach your children. We'll get into that in a little while. But if this can be assimilated, then you can remove so many barriers for your children and their relationship with God and their usefulness for God. Do you know how much more useful and how much more a person can fulfill their potential and their plan that God has for them if you will knock down the barriers for them? That they don't have to go through and work through all these things and wait till they're, like I said, till they're 40 before they're surrendered and able to be used. So the law is not our focus, but the law and our rules are a warning light. That means I don't focus. You know, we don't do this. We don't go look at the Ten Commandments every day and say, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm not going to murder anybody today. I'm not even going to get mad at them. I'm not going to lust. I'm not going to steal anything. I'm not going to covet. We don't do that. We follow Jesus, and then we fulfill those things. But if I see that I'm doing some of those things, if I'm breaking some of those rules, then there should be some warning signals going off that I'm not following Jesus. If I'm not loving my neighbor, then I should wake up. I don't then all of a sudden focus on loving my neighbor. I focus on following Jesus, submitting to Him, surrendering to Him. That's grace. So, the rules that we do set up in our home, these rules, if we get a hold of this principle, I believe that the rules that we set up in our home can bring freedom and security, not oppression, poor self-worth in that sense of never being accepted. And it doesn't bring pride either. You know, rules can bring pride too. So we want our rules to bring freedom and security. Dobson gives an example of this. And this idea, this central way of thinking, didn't come from Dobson. It actually came from my old favorite teacher there, Don Landis, I'd heard him teach on this before, but just recently I heard it and it's like, there is something to this. We've got to investigate this. It just falls right in line with everything we're doing. But Donaldson gives an example of this thing about rules. And, you know, they've done so many experiments on this thing. We talked about it some last week, some of the thing about giving a child, not restricting their will and giving them free rein and all that. And they did this experiment on a playground. And they had, you know, playgrounds they have around the edge. They have this, a lot of times they'll have, thankfully so, they'll have a fence, you know, big chain link fence all around the thing. And you know, we're really, this fence is giving them a feeling of restriction. And it's inhibiting their, their spirit or something. And so we're going to take down this fence so that they're not inhibited. They feel more free to run and play and enjoy. So they took down the fence. It's a true story. Took down the fence. And they found that when the kids came out for recess and to play, they huddled into the middle of the playground. They didn't have the protection of that fence. So we want to use our rules in our home in that way to bring more freedom and protection, not to inhibit and to oppress and to put down our kids. We want order and obedience in our homes. We want that, right? But we don't want that to be the focus. We want that to be the result of something else, just like in our lives. We want order and obedience in our lives. But we don't want it to be because we have a set of rules that we're trying to follow. Because we can never do that. We follow Jesus, not the law. A relationship, not works. And not accomplishment, and not behavior, and success. We follow Jesus. And as a result of that relationship, we obey. So let's look at least four reasons that rules... We're looking at this in the negative sense here for a minute. Look at four reasons that rules are not to be your ultimate goal. Let's look at Galatians 5:23. You know, I didn't have a lot of verses today. It's because it's almost because there were so many, so I didn't know where to start. It's more like the great theme of the Bible, really, is what we're talking about. And so it was hard to nail it down into a few verses, and I'm confident that you guys understand that theme. So let's go to Galatians 5:23. And I'll read 22 also, but the last part of 23 is the point I was going to make. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law. In other words, there's no law to follow to get those things in your life. Those things come in your life, we know this, as a result of yielding to the Holy Spirit that lives in you. Fruit. So, a reason that we don't have a rule-based home is that it's inadequate. This is one reason. It's just inadequate. You can never have a complete enough list. The second rule is that it's hypocritical. To have a rule-based home is hypocritical because you, as a parent, will mock your own system because you won't do it either. And they will see that you don't do it. And that will do some strange things to them when they see you not obeying the very rules that you're giving them. Now, we're going somewhere with this. This is not going to where you just don't have any rules. And everybody just does what they want to do. But, you know, perhaps your children will get a hold of this system that you implement and they will try to keep such a system their whole life. And as we've already been talking, I think some of us can probably see this in ourselves. Anybody see a little of their family they were raised in this? It also will affect for a long time how you approach God, how you tend to approach God. Because no matter how much I teach that you are completely accepted by God. How many times have I told you that? You are righteous. You've had righteousness instilled to you. If you've accepted Jesus as your substitute, He accepts you right now as if you are as righteous as Jesus. He accepts you. But who doesn't believe that? Who has trouble believing that? Do we struggle with that a little bit? You are holy. You are holy because you've obeyed all these rules. No, you are holy because He is holy. That's why you are holy. That is the relationship. You see, we're getting towards the heart of the relationship between law and grace. And somehow we need to be able to learn how to apply this in the family. But many well-intended parents will send a hypocritical message. Number three, some reasons that we do not have a law-based, a rule-based home. Number three. It challenges a child to test the list. Now, we just can't get around this. This is going to happen. Okay? When you give a rule, I just want to prove to myself that children have an old nature, so I'm going to give you a rule. And there, you'll see, they'll test it. But let's go to Romans 7:5. Now, this is talking about the law, being under the law, like we're talking, having a law-based home. For when we were controlled by the sinful nature, the sinful passions aroused by the law were at work in our bodies so that we bore fruit for death. The law aroused those sinful passions. The law aroused the desire to break the law. And if we have a law-based system, rule-based, rule-focused, the very thing of focusing on those rules will tempt to break the rules. That's the old nature. What is the motive for doing right? What is the motive for doing right? There's a fine line here, so listen to this. Is it fear of punishment or disapproval? Is that the motive for doing right? Is that you are afraid of being punished, so you do right? That's the law. But that's not the intended purpose of discipline. That's not the intended purpose of God's discipline to us, and that's not the intended purpose of our discipline to our children. Discipline is to instill fear of doing wrong. It is to train and it is to teach. But a central purpose is to instill fear for doing wrong. It is not motivation to do right. There's a fine line, but it's a critical concept. Number four, when law or rules or conduct is the goal in the home, that makes Jesus not the goal. You know, there's a joy in doing right. And rewards help. You know, this is not against giving kids rewards for doing right. That is appropriate. And we'll talk about some ways that can be implemented and still have this principle. And it's encouraging to... It's like us encouraging each other when we see each other doing the right thing. That's kind of a reward, you know. It feels good. And that's an encouragement. Keep going with it, you know. You keep doing right. You're doing good. And that's, we like to hear that. And that's okay. But that's not the driving force for doing the right thing. We must instill a pattern of following Jesus. So how can we model this? Let's try to get a feel for what we're talking about here. How do we model this? How do we not be hypocrites with our rules? Here's one way. Is that And I believe this will gain respect for your kids. And I know things change as from we're talking about a, you know, an 18-month-old, or you're talking about a 5-year-old, or you're talking about a 10-year-old. But, you know, there are different ways that we have to communicate. But when we sin, we admit that we have sinned. And we let them see how we deal with it. Because they know you don't obey the rules. You know? They intuitively, they might not be able to verbalize it. But they know. You know, when you're coming at your child, and you're swinging and hollering and yelling, they know that's not right. They know it's not right. You're breaking the rule. You're breaking some rules about anger and how you treat people. So, when you sin, and it may not be sin towards your kids even, they just may see you, maybe you get mad at your husband or your wife, and they see it. Mouth open, eyes this big, that you may not even notice, but they notice. And they notice from the other room too. When you sin, you admit that you sinned. You repent. That's how you deal with it. You live with your focus on Jesus, and the law reveals to you when you are not. You know, this is another example. I wasn't going to mention this right now, but I think it seems to fit in. You know, if a child admits that they sin, you know, they follow, let's say they follow your example. They admit, they voluntarily admit that they've sinned. They've done wrong. They tell you something. You know, that is an opportune moment for grace. You sit down with them and you say, you know, I've been in your same situation. You have to, in a way they can explain it. You know, I sinned. You know, I sinned against God. And I deserved punishment. I deserved it. It was God's right to punish me forever for the sin that I did. But God forgave me. He died in my place. And as an example of that, you're not getting punished for that. I'm offering you grace. This is the kind of grace that God offered me. What an impact. I'm not saying to do that every time. They'll take advantage of you. Believe me. And I'm not... You have to know your own kids. You have to know the right time. And you have to not use that as an excuse. Because none of us want to discipline our kids. That's hard work. That's a lot of trouble to discipline your kids. To go through that. So it's easier sometimes just to not discipline. So please do not use this as an escape. But use it as a teaching tool. That's kind of a relief, isn't it? To me, that's relief. I can show the grace of God. I need to show the grace of God to my kids, but I don't need to show it to them through neglect of discipline. I need to show it to them through grace. And we teach them God's Word. That's what defines the Jesus they follow, is God's Word, where they really know who Jesus is. It's not impressions. It's not emotions. It's not impressions from the culture or the media, because they'll get an impression from media. They'll get an impression from the culture of who Jesus is. But you have to give them the Word so they know the right Jesus to follow. We follow Jesus, not a bunch of rules. And they need to get that. Our goal, as we said before, is to send them into the world with an internal value system, not a bunch of inadequate rules. Your rules, no matter how many you have, won't help them much when they get out in the world. Remember something here is that, do you remember those gaps we talked about when we talked about church structure? How a church is structured that with leadership, with the body, and there's gaps that only God can fill. You know, leadership is not to get vision and make a 5-year plan and make decisions. But leadership's job is to go to God and say, you're the head. What do we do now? What do we do now? That's the job of leadership. You see, there's a gap that's in the structure of the church. There's also a gap in the structure of the family. Because you can't do this on part-time Christianity. I hope you're understanding here that if this is going to work, if you're really going to equip your kids like this, that means that you're going to get up and trust God today. You're going to depend on Him today. And you're going to bear the fruit of that. You're going to follow Jesus, and they're going to follow you. All this stuff I'm teaching you on children, family, husband, throw it out the window. Throw it out the window if you're not going to follow Jesus. If you're not going to get up and follow Jesus tomorrow, don't do this. Don't be a hypocrite with it. You go find some child psychology book and follow that method. It'll work better than this if you take Jesus out. He's got to be the center. He's got to be the center of your life. Training children, having a godly family is a sacrifice. It's a sacrifice. It's about putting other people's needs ahead of your own. It's about not being self-focused. Only God can fill these gaps. It doesn't work with part-time Christianity. Just going to church. Just feeling emotional about Jesus. It's getting up and depending on God. Trust in Jesus today. Today. He must be the center. You must be dependent on Him, bearing fruit, admitting when you're not. Because there's going to be times when you're not. It's about admitting when you're not. And it's about not faking it. It's about dealing with it. We'd rather fake it than deal with it. But it's about not admitting you're wrong. To your kids, to your wife, to your husband. It's dealing with it, not just carrying on. I think I have about 5 more minutes. Are you all still awake? I want to get to one principle so we can... It's almost like we have to have a whole list of principles. I'm working on a whole list of principles that will make this... that'll bring this into focus. But I want to get to the first principle here, and it'll kind of bring into focus our foundational principle of grace-based rather than law-based home. So, one of the easiest places to see this is discipline, when we use discipline in the home. It's a very misunderstood thing. It's a very misused thing. It's hard to get it right. So let's take a look. Let's first look at what God's attitude... This is cool. Let's look. The Bible gives us a picture of God's attitude in disciplining us as His children. Now, wouldn't that be a good example to follow? How God disciplines and what's His attitude, what's His purpose in bringing discipline to us? Because God disciplines us. He disciplines me. I hope He disciplines you. If He doesn't, the Bible tells us you're not a child of His if He doesn't discipline you. So let's try to get a picture of that. Hebrews chapter 12. You know what? I don't want any of this to... My goal, I would be really disappointed if somebody went through this and just got guilty and said, oh, I haven't been doing it right. I've been messing up. My kids are damaged for life. Please don't do that. You know, if my parents were to go through this, and my parents... And I'll look back, I think, wow, I have a whole lot to learn from them. And I'll share some stories next week. I would hate for them to look at something like this and say, oh, I should have done this wrong. I should have done this different. You know, what's most important is where you are today. God is merciful. His merciful extends into the past. It really does. He will take what was meant for harm and He'll use it for good. He can do it. He flip-flops it. I don't know how, but He does. So don't, if you have, you know, if your child is 4 and you think it's too late and you've messed up, it's not too late. Even if they're 17. God is merciful. He is merciful. And He's grace-based. He wants you. If there's changes to be made, He wants you to make them now. And He'll take care of the past. So, Hebrews 12, 6 through 12. Let's see how God disciplines you and me. 6 through 12. Actually, I'm going to start up there in verse 5. And you have forgotten that word of encouragement that addresses you as sons. My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when He rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines those He loves, and He punishes every son He accepts, everyone He accepts as a son. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as sons, for what son is not disciplined by his father? If you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are illegitimate children and not true sons. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. Look at that. Your children will respect you if you discipline them. Sorry, Kirsten. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? Our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good that we may share in His holiness. No discipline seems pleasing at the time, but painful. Discipline is not discipline if it doesn't hurt. If it's not painful. It doesn't accomplish its task, its purpose, if it's not uncomfortable. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Man, that is good stuff there. That's encouraging. It's not easy, but it's encouraging. God disciplines His children out of extreme love. Extreme love. Look at the cross. That is extreme love. And when He disciplines us, it is out of His motive of extreme love. We also must discipline our children off a foundation of extreme sacrificial love. If we are going to discipline our children, they must know they are loved in the big picture. See, discipline does not stand alone, but it's within the context of your whole relationship with your kids. It's within the context of the whole thing. It doesn't stand by itself. If I think the love languages that we talked about, this is a foundation for discipline. If you want discipline that works, you must have been loved. You could go through that list and say, am I practicing these things with my kids? Am I thinking of them, giving them just, I'm not talking an expensive thing, but a gift every now and then, just something to just please them. Am I spending time with them? Am I talking to them? Am I showing them affection? You can go down that list and go back and look at that and see if you are showing love to your kids. But discipline is in the context of the whole relationship and your whole philosophy of raising kids. You look back over those verses and see the firm, consistent, fair, painful discipline is a key part of a parent's love. If you don't show your kids firm, consistent, fair, painful discipline, then you're not loving them the way you need to be loving them. And discipline is a key tool in getting control of the will that we talked about. That's one of your primary jobs, is getting control of the will. A will out of control is they can't get control of it. And they go wild. You need to help them get control of their will by getting control of it for them. It's your responsibility. They don't have the ability to do it yet. And it teaches respect and obedience. Discipline teaches respect and obedience. And it's every day, especially with young kids. Who's in control today? Who's in control today? You need to be able to answer that. You're in control. And they need to be able to answer that. Mom or dad, mom and dad are in control. Think about in the natural. How kids learn. How do kids learn that gravity learn about gravity. How you climb up in the high chair, nobody's around, you stand on the top, you get something, and whoom, it goes down. What happened? How did they learn? What's the best? We don't like it, and I'm not saying that you leave your kids alone, but what's the thing they will remember if they get hurt? If something hurts, that, I'm sorry, but that is the part. If that, ow, that hurt, and you see them be hesitant the next time, they need to be hesitant and respect gravity. What about that hot stove? You tell them it's hot, 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 you always have to pull their hand away. If they touch it one time, you don't have to pull their hand away anymore. They know it's hot. They remember it. Why do they remember it? It was an intense moment. It was pain. It's no fun, but we know right here, you look right after that, but it talks about in verse 11, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. But what does it produce? What does it produce? A harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. That means that discipline is an indispensable part of training and equipping your children. So how do we do this? Let's go to some verses here. Now, we don't have time to get into all of today. We'll continue on with this next week, but we'll read a few of these verses. These verses in Proverbs. Well, they deal with spanking. Is what they deal with. I won't say that too loud. Get us in trouble. I believe these verses that we are reading here are talking about dealing with not milk that's accidentally spilled, toys that are forgotten in the yard, breaking a window accidentally. Those are not the things that we're talking about right here. We're talking about rebellion. Rebellion, I'm telling you, you cannot reason out rebellion. And rebellion has to be dealt with, but you cannot reason it out. I'm sure that you've all experienced that. Proverbs 5:12-14. You will say, how I hated discipline, how my heart spurned correction. I would not obey my teachers or listen to my instructors. I have come to the brink of utter ruin in the midst of the whole assembly. That's a person that did not get discipline. And chapter 13, verse 12. I'm not sure if I have the right verse here. Oh, I think it's actually verse 13. He who scorns instruction will pay for it, but he who respects a command is rewarded. And verse 24. He who spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is careful to discipline him. That sounds a lot like Hebrews, doesn't it? How God loves us. And 22:15. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. And 29:15. You didn't know all this was in here, did you? Of course. The rod of correction imparts wisdom, but a child left to himself disgraces his mother. Now, I know there are very likely some differing opinions here, so I want to be careful. But I believe, and I'm not ready to make this blanket statement. You know your children. But at the same time, I believe that the Bible is teaching that it's teaching us something about our nature, the nature of our children, the nature of us, the nature of how God deals with us, and the nature of how we can deal with our children. You know, a little pain now is better than a lot of pain later. That's just a classic example. Is if your child is continuing to run in the street and will not obey you, they will, you can't read, they don't understand that there's big 5,000 pound vehicles out there they don't stand a chance against. But they may remember some pain. If a spanking doesn't hurt, then it doesn't do its job. I'm not talking about injuring a child. We have to stand against child abuse. I'm not talking about doing this in anger. And we're going to talk some more about this and how to go about this. It's good to give choices. And I really, that thing of giving choices is really awesome. I've seen that work so much of, no, do you want to do this or do you want to do that? And they have two choices and they have to make a choice, and that's good. But when it comes to rebellion, out and out rebellion, you've seen it. Choices and throw all that stuff out the window. Because rebellion has to be dealt with. And it's not by reason and it's not by choices. What we are telling them, we have a couple of messages, especially when they're young, really young, is that I love you too much to let disobedience and rebellion become a pattern. I love you too much to let that happen in your life. To let rebellion and disobedience get ingrained in you and become a pattern in your life. I'm going to work it out of you now. We're going to do it together. We're going to work through it. I believe that this type of discipline is reserved for rebellion. You know it. You see it in their eyes. You know it. I believe it's reserved for that. You know, in the old days, moms had this in-between thing, persuasion. I don't see it used much today. But they used to have this, you know, cops have these different holds, you know, they call them come-along holds. You know, where like you this thing where you get them and then they're the biggest, toughest guy. He's coming right along with you. But my mom used to have a few come-along holds. And, yeah, the ear twist, you know. It was like a good in-between, little bit of pain, get your attention. Whoop, you're coming with me. I am. You know, I'm in control. I'm in charge here. And you're coming with me. And it may take a little bit of correctly applied pain to convince you of that. You know, it could be, you know, that when God knew the fall was going to come, He knew that kids were going to need to be disciplined. So He gave this area of their body with a little extra padding that's, you know, not going to inflict any damage. That's convenient, isn't it? Pain with no harm. That's pretty convenient. Because no harm. What? Pain, that's a convenient thing. That you can inflict a little bit of pain and not hurt them. Not give them any physical harm. And we can talk about this some more. I hope you have some questions. If you do, please come talk to me or write it down. A switch that stings, that hurts, but does no damage is a pretty good tool. You know, it's better than if you've been around an emergency room very much. You've probably seen the old classic, what do they call those things? The mother dislocation? Hopefully. You know, where the mom says, "You come with me where you're..." Pulls the old shoulder right out of the socket. It's a common injury in the bench. That happens. Now, I think a little properly applied persuasion would be better than a dislocated shoulder. And better than things going to a level of frustration that is not appropriate. So next week, though, we'll look some more discipline. And we'll look at some times, some reasons that the rod doesn't work, even in rebellion. We'll look at some reasons, some things that maybe need to be done different in how it's handled, that when it's not working, why isn't it working? Why are some reasons why it's not working? I'll tell you, we're closed, but there is no time like there is no more teachable moment when discipline has worked. When discipline has worked, there's submission, there is a moment of time, a window, when there is a teachableness that is goes deep. Do you? I love you. Do you know how much I love you? I hated to do that, but I had to teach you this. Do you know why Mama or why Daddy had to spank you? Do you understand why I had? And there's, you can push that truth deep at that moment, and it works. But I've seen it in myself too, with God dealing with me. When I've humbled myself and I've got that spanking from God and I have submitted myself to Him, in that moment, He's taught me some things. But you know, I've seen it in adult situations other than myself too. So, I'm gone too long. Let's pray.